So they were basically using Lyft to request rides for these Medicaid beneficiaries. And we met with them, dug deeper into it, and said, wait a second, there's a much larger opportunity. And can we build solutions specifically designed for that use case? So they're not using a Lyft app, which, you know, it worked for in that situation, but it could even be better, a better experience and a better solution. And that led to us designing our concierge solution and really opened our eyes and really showed us that there's a tremendous opportunity here in healthcare.
Welcome back to another episode of Pop Health Podcast. This is your host, Zach Morgan. Thanks again for being with us. Have you used a rideshare app before? More and more these days, they seem to be replacing the traditional modes of transportation. And it comes as no surprise that has gone from consumer-facing to business-facing in some instances. In many ways, Lyft has been one of the more forward-thinking rideshare companies, and we've been lucky enough to get to know Dan Trigham, Regional Vice President, over the years as we've collaborated with them on many projects in healthcare. In this episode, we talked to Dan about Lyft's efforts in the healthcare space and how they look to innovate the senior care industry and the healthcare industry at large through their rideshare app. We hope you enjoy this episode, and as Dan mentions at the end of the episode, there's a special code he gives so you can get $15 off your first ride if you've never used the Lyft app before. Thanks again.
So Dan, as we like to start out each episode, can you tell us something about you that may surprise the audience, maybe a fun fact about you?
So real fun fact is I've hit a home run in AT&T Park.
How many feet?
It was dead center. It was probably like 450, I'd say.
All right.
It's on YouTube. So you Google my last name, home run, AT&T Park. You'll see it.
Wow. Off of the batting practice pitcher?
It was a pitching machine. Aluminum bat. So I can't.
Hey, still. Hey, no judgment here. That's pretty impressive. Did you play baseball?
Yeah, growing up, I played a lot of sports. Definitely baseball was one of my most favorite sports, but yeah, I was a baseball player. A lot of softball now. So
nice, man. And how fast was the machine pitching?
I'd like to say 90.
Yeah, right. at least, yeah, triple digits.
I think it was probably like 40, 50.
Nice. Yeah. And did the crowd go wild or?
If you watch the replay, there was an announcer who was announcing. It was like a fun event they had for Visa card holders. My friend was one. Anyways. If you listen to it, the sports announcer was like, Dan, I've done a lot of these things, and that rarely happens.
Nice, man.
Oh, nice. Excellent. That's a pretty good one. I think that's one of the better ones that we've had from a guest.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dan, can you maybe just a general question, share a little bit about Lyft, maybe when it was founded, you know, how many rides you guys might do, drivers, growth, coverage, et cetera.
Sure. So Lyft was founded in 2012. By our two founders, one we call affectionately Jay-Z, or John Zimmer, and Logan Green. And they came together, and they actually, even before Lyft was started a company called Zimride. And some people might think of John Zimmer, that's where it came from. But it actually came from the word Zimbabwe, of all places. One of our founders spent a lot of time there and saw how in Zimbabwe there are these big vans, large format vehicles, taking people from villages to or from there in Zimbabwe. And it was a very communal, very effective way of transportation there. He came back to the U.S. over Facebook, met the co-founder of Lyft, and basically they said, we need to bring some sort of this type of transportation to the U.S., some form or version of it. And they started a company called Zimride, which is really designed for college students. So okay. It's basically large format vehicles, vans, and they really targeted college campuses to get folks to or from campus during holiday break, whatever it might be. It was a successful company. They ended up selling that company to Enterprise, and Enterprise actually owns that company today.
Oh, wow.
And then they said, you know, in 2012, we want to really focus on more local, at the time, cell phones were becoming more and more common, and they saw an opportunity to really build a true rideshare platform. And in 2012, Lyft started.
Okay.
So it started then. And then today, we now do well over 1 million trips a day. We have close to 1 million drivers on the road, and we touch 95% of the entire U.S. population. the other interesting thing, I mean, obviously it's taken some time to get to where we are today.
Right.
The other interesting aspect of our founders is their backgrounds. So one came from the kind of the hotel travel hospitality management background.
Yeah.
He went to the Cornell School of Hospitality Management. And he always viewed the world as what is the experience you get? When you walk into a hotel, they're trying to maximize their occupancy. It's all about that experience you have with the bellman at the front desk. He's trying to earn your tip. And it's really about that experience. And that's really kind of the foundation of the experience that he wanted to build within the Lyft experience, is how the drivers treat the passenger, and certainly also how we treat the driver. And then another founder came from more of a transit background. He was one of the youngest folks on his transportation board in the city that where he lived at the time. And was really fascinated, you know, driving around Los Angeles, where he was from, and looking around at himself and saying, you know, wait a second. There's all these cars around me, you know, certainly all the traffic we know. And these cars are only at 20% occupancy. They're moving around with four empty seats and one person in there. And then, oh, by the way, when that car is parked on the at home or on the driveway, wherever, it's only utilized less than or around 4% of the time. 96% of the time, the car is never even being utilized. And you look at households in America, your car, typically after your home, is your second largest household expense. So,
right.
You know, these two came together and really kind of drove the mission of Lyft and ride sharing. And here we are today, now doing well over 1 million rides a day and growing.
Yeah. Do you find that a lot of the drivers themselves do it as a full-time job, or do a lot of people do it as just a part-time gig for a little bit of extra money? Is it pretty evenly split?
You know, it varies quite a bit. You know, that's one of the beauties of the Lyft platform for drivers is it gives them that flexibility. So many, you know, a driver can drive a few hours a day or over 8 hours a day or when they want. So it really, there is a good mix of how many full-time versus part-time. A lot of times we see our drivers do this as a way to earn extra income to supplement. Maybe they're in school or have some other job and have flexibility other hours of the day when they're not at that job. So it varies quite a bit.
Yeah. On my way up here, I actually had a ride with a gentleman named Henry, who's a college student. He's getting his master's degree. He also does music work. And it was supplemental income, mm-hmm. and he loved it. And I did tell him I might give him a shout out because I had a really good experience.
Yeah, so, and that's a common story we hear. The other interesting thing is for our elder population, you know, those that are 55 and older, being able to be a driver to earn extra income and stay socially active. And we see a percentage of our drivers who are 55 and older, and a great way for them to get back out into the community and earn that supplemental income.
So one thing, and we see this a lot on the healthcare side, but just in general, you know, growing up, they always say, don't get in strangers' cars and don't do that. What is kind of the common objection that people have to using rideshare for the first time or using Lyft for the first time? And how do you see people overcoming that? Or does it happen pretty quickly once they've tried it out?
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point, you know, one of the things maybe a lot of children are taught is never go somewhere with a stranger or get in the car with a stranger a while back ago. And that is certainly, you know, when we look at the growth of the platform and our passengers, there certainly is that concern, I'm getting in with somebody that I don't know. But that's really where we build the infrastructure and the systems and the policies and procedures in place where we provide that level of comfort in terms of the screening of our drivers. So all our drivers go through a Sterling back check, which is FBI accredited. Fortune 100 companies use Sterling. It's one of the one of the gold standards of background screening. We do quarterly DMV checks, 19-point vehicle inspections. So it's really about letting our passengers know the level of security and rigor that all our drivers have to go through before they can drive for our platform. And there is certainly that hesitation from maybe our elder population where they're just not used to getting in the car with somebody they don't know. But the more we can do to educate, the more we can do to build these partnerships that we have, I think is really making a difference. And we're seeing the growth. You know, ride sharing, it's kind of crazy. When you think about all transportation in the U.S., all the money spent on gas, mileage, insurance, ground transportation, ride sharing is still less than 1% of the total.
Right.
Yet we're growing quite a bit. So it's an interesting time, and you know, certainly I believe we'll only continue to grow, and we'll be one of these days, you know, the standard of of ground transportation.
Yeah. It may only be a percentage, but don't tell the taxi companies that, because they certainly seem to be worried about it. So, Dan, can you tell us a little bit about, or tell the audience a little bit about your background? You actually are not new to healthcare. How did you become involved with healthcare to begin with?
Yeah, so from a variety of different ways, my family actually operates a home care business in the Bay Area. They've been doing it for about 15 years. So non-medical home care, serving our elder population, helping folks with activities of daily living. So that's been a business that's been around for a while. I never worked for the business, but at a high level, kind of understood what was going on. And then I did investment banking, consulting, and healthcare for some big companies. And then I had my own startup in the senior care space. So a company I helped found was a company called Open Placement, where we built a care coordination platform for those in a hospital at the moment of discharge. Case manager gives a piece of paper, here's some options to you, good luck. We basically automated that process so the case manager family can search and find a care provider based on their needs. So I did that for a while and then had the opportunity to learn about Lyft and kind of the focus within healthcare and the opportunity to come and help grow a team focused on what we call elder mobility and healthcare in general. The other thing too I'd mention is I've been a caregiver for my own grandmother. So my family are all immigrants to this country. I'm first generation American. My sister, parents, grandmother came here from Russia. And my grandmother lived to be 93 years old, was pretty ambulatory, could get in and out of a car on her own. But the only time she would leave her apartment in New York City was probably once a week when my dad and I would come visit her from New Jersey. So, you know, I'd argue how truly independent was she beyond the walls of her apartment and how easy was it for her to go where she wanted. And I think about, you know, if I was able to request a ride for her and know where she is during the ride and be able to pay for the ride for her and have that level of comfort, you know, I'd argue her quality of life would have been much different. So basically, I had the opportunity to join Lyft and really help focus on this healthcare vertical and grow our work in elder mobility.
Yeah. And so that's a great segue. Can you tell us a little bit about your role here at Lyft?
Yeah, so my role is helping to lead our healthcare partnerships on the West Coast. So I have a counterpart out of our New York office. And when I first started, I was really focusing on elder mobility, so building partnerships with senior living operators, home care providers. But it's really kind of grown quite a bit into focusing on other areas of healthcare. So hospital systems, health plans, we're doing work in clinical trials. And it's really kind of grown since I joined about a year and a half ago.
Yeah. And what... For Lyft, because healthcare is not obviously the core business or the way that it started as the core business. So what was it about healthcare that sparked some sort of interest for Lyft? Was there kind of an aha moment, or was there something that made them realize that there was this segment that wasn't being tapped into or addressed, or that it could really solve a problem there?
Yeah, so a couple of things to that. I think one, just our core mission. So, you know, there's other companies out there that do ride sharing. One thing that's, you know, we really pride ourselves on is our mission, our values, what drives this company. And our mission statement at Lyft is to improve people's lives with the world's best transportation. And when you think about that statement, you know, we truly is embodied within this whole company from a variety of different things that we do. But in particular, too, how it could really, with transportation, with Lyft, impact our elder, low-income, at-risk population. So I think just healthcare fits very well within that mission. The other thing, too, in terms of how we kind of really, what was it, like the aha moment, it was an interesting story. So we, several years ago, we basically saw that one app was requesting all these rides in upstate New York. And it was kind of odd, like one Lyft account scheduling all these rides. You know, Lyft was never really intended where, you know, one person schedules many rides for other people. It's really intended for that user. So we kind of dug into that and we said, okay, what's going on? It's got to be fraud or something unusual here. So we looked into it and there was this company in upstate New York called National MedTrans, which is one of our first healthcare partners. That's basically what's called a broker in the Medicaid space. So this company basically coordinates rides for Medicaid beneficiaries. And typically 85% of all Medicaid beneficiaries are ambulatory. And historically that NatMed company, National MedTrans, was using taxis for those rides.
Yeah.
When ride sharing became more popular, they're like, oh, wait a second, we can save a lot of money and potentially and can provide a better experience with a Lyft solution. So they were basically using Lyft to request rides for these Medicaid beneficiaries. And we met with them, dug deeper into it, and said, wait a second, there's a much larger opportunity. And can we build solutions specifically designed for that use case? So they're not using a Lyft app, which you know, it worked for in that situation, but it could even be better, a better experience and a better solution. And thus, that led to us designing our concierge solution and really opened our eyes and really showed us that there's a tremendous opportunity here in healthcare.
Yeah. We actually just had the opportunity to hear you speak at a conference too. And you talked a little bit about the Medicaid or RIDE program. Just for the audience, just so they don't know, because that was actually honestly something I didn't even know was that existed, let alone as robust as it is. Can you tell the audience a little bit about the rides that they cover and that program in general?
Yeah, so the government in this country spends in excess of $3 billion a year on what's called non-emergency medical transport, NEMT, the acronym, for Medicaid beneficiaries. So if you're on Medicaid in this country, it's a covered benefit to get transportation to a doctor's office or a hospital visit, and as well as Medicare Advantage, their plans to cover transportation. And how it works is that there's what's called these brokers who are just middlemen who coordinate rides for Medicaid. They're not in the transportation business. However, they have contracts with an ACO, an MCO, a state Medicaid agency. They're the ones who coordinate the rides, and then they basically contract those rides out to a wheelchair accessible vehicle operator, a company that has an ambulette service, and the vast majority are ambulatory curb-to-curb trips. So historically, they were using taxis or are using taxis.
Yeah.
And now we've started to partner with a lot of these organizations like LogistiCare, AMR, ALC, many, many others to really provide, you know, help save cost. One of the main issues within Medicaid transport is waste, fraud, and abuse when dealing with taxi providers and paper pen taxi receipts. This is one of our growing areas of focus, one of our largest areas of focus within healthcare and kind of how we first started in healthcare.
Yeah. And so just diving into a little bit more of the logistics and your team in general, what does your team focus on? What are you tasked with? What are some of the goals of your team as a unit?
Yeah. So our team here is part of a broader enterprise team at Lyft. So originally the B2B team started with enterprise partnerships. So what that means is working with Fortune 100 companies to leverage Lyft solutions for their employees, so for ground transportation. So, you know, for example, we work with Apple, and Apple employees can use Lyft for ground transportation. And the idea there is instead of expensing taxi receipts and rental cars, they can now use Lyft through our coordinated program and make it really easy for the employee as well as save a lot of money for the employer. So that's kind of the core team, the core business unit. And then within that, we have a team that we call GEHT, or the GET team. And that stands for Government, Education, Healthcare, and Transit. And our focus is on building partnerships with enterprises or organizations that focus on those verticals. So all the kind of non-traditional use cases of Lyft. And then the team I'm on in particular, we focus on the healthcare partnership. So building partnerships with various players within the healthcare spectrum.
Yeah. And I know you said you focus on a lot on the government business, the Medicaid rides and things like that. Do you put a large focus on like individual healthcare, you know, whether it's health systems or healthcare organization partnership and utilization? I know you've announced some exciting ones, I think even with like USC and different. Do you put a lot of focus on those individual health systems as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we do work with many individual health systems. Yeah. Like a good example is Ascension, which is the largest not-for-profit health system in the country. So their ministries, that's what they call their hospitals. We work with many of their ministries that use our solutions to help patients at discharge get to or from. Many hospital systems like them and others we work with, they use taxi vouchers today. So if you're ready to be discharged, they'll give a taxi voucher. And now instead we have a solution that we call a Lyft code. So they can give a Lyft code to a patient. When they enter it into a phone, it would only work if they're leaving the address of the hospital, only work if they're coming to a hospital. They can put time, date restrictions on it. So it's not like they give out these Lyft codes and they can use it for joyrides.
Sure.
And then we also have a solution called Concierge, which allows the case manager, social worker, the care professional, or our partner, whoever it is, to request a ride on behalf of somebody. So that end user, whether it's a patient or a senior, does not need a smartphone or need to know anything about Lyft.
Yeah. And those codes are pretty interesting. Can they also program like a destination? Like this code will only work if they're going to a particular destination as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can basically be tied to a particular geofence location around an address. So we basically say this code will only work if you're going to this address or within, you know, 0.2 mile radius or whatever, or if you're leaving that location.
Yeah.
And a really good example of that, we actually did a program with McKesson not too long ago because of the North Bay fires here in California.
Oh, yeah.
There was a devastating situation there in the North Bay with all the fires that were happening. So McKesson came to us and said, they're one of our partners, it was, we want to help provide relief rides to those impacted by the fires. So what we did was, is we created a Lyft code that would only work if you are trying to get to a treatment center or from a treatment center in the North Bay. So we have, we basically worked with Sutter, which is one of our partners, St. Joseph's Health, and a few others, where we were able to get codes to seniors, to patients, and McKesson, in this example, covered the cost of the ride, but these codes would only work to or from treatment centers in, sure, in the North Bay.
Sure. Without veering too far off topic, I think one thing that Gavin and I come across quite a bit is that a lot of these programs within the healthcare sector are starting to replace existing transportation programs. And one thing that comes up a lot are the voucher programs that are in place now that the rideshare programs are starting to replace. What are the benefits of a Lyft program like that versus some of the existing transportation options that these health systems have?
Yeah, I think it comes to primarily three key things. One is it's certainly cost savings. So one of the great benefits of Lyft is, in addition to being national, so we can go to any health system like Ascension, say we can provide coverage, you know, we touched 95% of the population today. In addition to that is the cost savings. So on average, Lyft is 35 to 55% more affordable than a taxi. So certainly saving the health system a significant amount of money. The other thing is full transparency. So the health system, in particular when they're using concierge, they're able to see where the patient is at all times of the trip. They get notified when they're dropped off. In the senior living example, the community knows where mom and dad are at all times during the trip. The family, the son, the daughter love to have that comfort level.
Sure.
And then finally is all the reporting we can provide. So they get detailed analytics and reporting on all these trips, all the data we have, we share with them through the platforms we have. And instead of paper pen taxi receipts, it's now fully automated. And we've really seen a reduction in waste, fraud, and abuse when it comes to using the taxi vouchers.
Yeah. And so I know that you can't share specific numbers, but how big is the healthcare programs in the healthcare division within Lyft? Does it make up a significant portion of the daily rides, or is it growing very quickly? Can you share anything on that?
Yeah, so I can say it's definitely a growing business unit within Lyft and a big area of focus. However, you know, we don't share as a company, we don't break out any of our data by segment. The other thing I can say is what we can share is, you know, today we're doing well over a million rides a day. The other thing I can share is in the first half of 2017, we completed more rides than all of 2016.
Wow.
So, you know, the growth is staggering. The markets we're in is continuing to grow. This is a growing area of focus for us. You know, we're really excited by the impact we can have within healthcare.
Yeah. And you went over some of these things. And again, I know not to give away the farm, but what have been some of the really innovative things that you've been able to do at Lyft that have really propelled you to kind of the top of this particular healthcare ride segment now?
Yeah, so I think you know, a couple of things. One is the solutions we've built, specifically designed for healthcare. So the concierge platform and the functionality we're building is getting better and better. And you know, the features we're building are to the needs of our partner. So
yeah,
we try to listen to them as much as we can and make changes based on the feedback we hear.
And on the concierge, sorry, just so in case people don't know, what other benefits besides one? I think one of the biggest one is that they can order and manage multiple rides at once. Mm-hmm. What other benefits do your partners have within that concierge program, or what other things does it offer them?
Yeah, it's really, to your point, allowing to manage all these rides at the same time, have that visibility into the ride. It really goes back to some of the things we mentioned earlier. You know, visibility, the reporting, the analytics they get from it, the security feature of knowing where their patients and residents are at all times. So a lot of those things really make it very, very impactful.
I think you were saying too that there's also a feature built in that if the rider has a cell phone, that it can actually text them with, was it the rider or the ride information or the car information as well?
Yeah. So when let's say a case manager at a hospital enters a ride for a patient, if the patient has a phone, a cell phone, doesn't have to be a smartphone, but a cell phone that can receive SMS text messages, when the ride's been dispatched, they'll get a text message letting them know the Lyft ride's on the way. Look for your driver, Dan, in the black Toyota Corolla with license plate XYZ. So they're also aware that the ride's on its way. They know to be ready, and they know what to look for when that driver shows up.
Yeah. And I know you're growing so quickly and shared some of that data, but especially being a new program, I would imagine that you had to paint a lot of pictures for people initially. What were some of the main challenges that you had to overcome working into the healthcare segment?
Well, I think it comes down to quite a bit of education and getting people comfortable with the solutions we have. And I think our approach has always been, you know, we understand the industry. We can talk the language of case managers or an executive director at a Brookdale community or wherever. So I think it's really been able to demonstrate, you know, our domain expertise and that we spend time in hospitals, our team has, in senior living communities or whatever it might be. So I think once people understand that we're not just throwing technology at something, I think a lot of times too, people just think of Lyft purely as a technology company, but sure. End of the day, we're also a people company. We're connecting, you know, you think about a million rides a day, at least 2 million people. Obviously there's Lyft rides with more than just two people in the car. Sure. So millions of people every single day, we're connecting them. So it's really about, you know, how we interact with people, how we treat our drivers, our passengers, and really getting that out there.
Yeah.
Cool. So Dan, you've had a lot of success in the 5 years Lyft has been up and running. You mentioned you've been here about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was very recently, Lyft announced expansion. Tell us a little bit about the expansion up to Toronto.
Yeah. So just this week, actually, we announced that we will be moving up north to Toronto. And, you know, it's only natural. There's so many cross-border trips already happening anyway, where many people are taking a Lyft from the border from the U.S. to Canada. So it's only natural to move up there. We already have a very large install base of folks who already have the Lyft app in that market. So a great place for us to expand, and we're excited to be going into another market.
How was it going into another country, working with government to get that approval? Was it difficult, long process?
Yeah, so I definitely wouldn't be the right person that. So I can't speak to that. We have a big team of folks here who really just focus on that. I wouldn't have much to comment on that.
No problem. So
just really quickly on, just as a note. So when you were saying the cross-border rides that were happening anyway, is that people that get a ride up to the border and go across, or is it actually a functionality where they could cross a border to drop someone off?
Yeah. So if we have service in the market, you can go from that market to wherever you're going. So if we have service in the States there on the border, you're able to take a Lyft and get dropped off there, which you wouldn't be able to do the reverse.
Sure.
So now obviously you can.
Right.
Okay, cool. So who can benefit from the integration of rideshare services like Lyft? Like what's an example customer who's using it for a healthcare benefit?
Yeah, so if you look at just the verticals we're working in, so first of all, in elder care, so we do a lot of work with all the major senior living operators like Brookdale Life Care Services, Pacific Retirement, Milestone Retirement, many, many others who are using our solutions to help their residents. We also, within elder care, do a lot of work with home care providers where a home care provider can request a Lyft for their caregiver, so making their caregivers more efficient. What we've seen is caregivers a lot more productive now. They can sit in the Lyft, take their notes, get ready for their next appointment, and not worry about all the hassles of vehicle ownership, like parking and figuring out where they're going. The other thing, too, is we've seen that they do a better job. They can sit in the backseat with the client and attend to them, not worried about driving a car, and just certainly be much more efficient. The other thing, too, is, you know, coming from the home care business, you always get calls all the time. The caregiver's car breaks down. I can't get to my appointment. What do I do? Well, not a problem. We'll get you a Lyft and get you to where you need to go. So that's kind of the elder care space. We do a lot of work with health systems. I mentioned Ascension. We work with Sutter, Denver Health System, many, many others. We're starting to do some work with health plans as well.
Yeah.
So we have a great partnership with Blue Cross Blue Shield, where now they're looking to provide Lyft as a covered benefit to their members. They've identified members that live in what they call transportation deserts, areas where they lack quality access to transport. And what they're able to do is basically, from their perspective, providing a Lyft ride to a member, if they can avoid a no-show or missed appointment, you know, the ROI on a $10, $12 Lyft ride is a no-brainer. Another area, too, that we're doing some work in is in clinical trials. So a clinical trial is only as effective as that patient showing up to take their meds. So when you think about patient retention and recruitment, There's a lot of interesting stuff we can do in the clinical trial space. We did some work with a pharma company called Axovant that did an Alzheimer's clinical trial.
Yeah.
And they use some of our solutions there to get folks to that trial. So yeah, so those are some of the areas. We talked about the Medicaid transport as well. So yeah, we're working with a lot of these brokers who coordinate Medicaid transport. And there's some the examples within the verticals.
Yeah. So you touched on the organization that is the broker for Medicaid. Are you having direct conversations with other plans? You mentioned Anthem as well. So with other plans, with CMS, are there conversations going on now to be not necessarily having to go through a third party? If, for example, let's say I'm a fee-for-service Medicare member, would there be an opportunity in the future to have Lyft as a covered benefit directly
through Medicare? Or do you see a pathway for that to happen?
Yeah, so to that question, so first of all, you mentioned Anthem. So we have a partnership with CareMore, which is in Southern California, which is part of Anthem. And similar to like the Blue Cross Blue Shield partnership, we do a lot of work with them. They've been very innovative in thinking about how transportation can have a huge impact on their members. But to answer that question specifically, yes. I mean, we see this is just the beginning. You know, one example I always give is, you know, 2012 when ride sharing started, or when Lyft started, there's only a handful of states that allowed for ride sharing. It's only kind of recognized as a viable form of transportation in a handful of states. And now today we're in pretty much every single state. So the same thing too, when you think about conversations with CMS and stuff, that's, you know, how they're thinking about things. Some of the regulations aren't as, they just were built in a time before ride sharing existed. So, yeah, I think there's a path there to have more of an impact and do a lot. You know, it certainly takes a little time with folks like CMS and trying to, you know, be more ride share friendly.
That's something we see on the elder care side also, is just that a lot of the things that are happening now are so innovative that they're just not built into any of the existing. It's not that they're against any policies or procedures. They just aren't even built in there. So it has to be done. One thing I did want to touch on, you mentioned the senior living providers that you partner with. Just for the audience, I mean, we have the benefit of getting to work with you and knowing kind of how that works. But can you kind of paint the picture of what a ride for a resident would look like, or what the process looks like? So this community gets access to the concierge service, but what does that look like when they actually utilize it?
Sure. So a great way for the audience too, if you just do a quick Google search on Lyft Brookdale blog, you'll see a blog post they put up. The first thing that'll come up, and there's a video there showing a 93-year-old resident, Pat King, using Lyft. So it's a great way to just see how it's been impacting their community. But in short, how it works is we basically empower the community with our concierge solution. So the front desk, the executive director, associate ED, or any staff member, it could be one person, it could be every single staff member, would have access to this website. And typically the front desk will have it. The resident will call or go to the front desk and say, I'd like to go to the doctor's office or the florist or wherever. And they're able to, in less than a few seconds, request the ride for them, either on demand or they can schedule up to a week in advance. And they manage that whole flow. And then we help with, you know, marketing and materials and information for the community that they can, you know, share with their residents. We sometimes do town hall meetings. We'll come in and meet with the residents. And, you know, they're certainly more than welcome to use the Lyft app directly. What we find is they prefer it, that it's kind of managed for them by the community, in this example.
Sure.
So a lot of neat things are happening, Dan, but it's probably the tip of the iceberg. So 3 years from now, 5 years from now, what is your vision of a Lyft-enabled healthcare system?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are just at the tip of the iceberg. I think there's so much more that we can and will do and things we're working on. You know, caregivers in this country are usually hourly employees, overworked, underpaid. In between shifts, you know, could they be a Lyft driver? Can they earn extra income, supplemental income by being on the Lyft platform? And also imagine a world where now we have these caregivers who are drivers. Now someone can access a caregiver as a driver if they need one. So being able to request a Lyft with a licensed and qualified caregiver. So I think there's some interesting things there. And then also, certainly Lyft is playing a big role in autonomous and where the future lies with that, in an area of focus. And imagine if a senior is able to request a Lyft, but instead of a driver, there's a licensed and qualified caregiver in the car, and what that experience could be like. So I think certainly a lot to come, just really at the tip of the iceberg, and a lot of things that we'll continue to work on.
And actually on the autonomous cars, again, we had the benefit of hearing you speak recently, but I know that everybody, I think, kind of knows that is coming, but you brought up some interesting points, even about like configuration of the car and cost saving potentials for health systems in general. Can you just expand for the audience a little bit about the ways that some of those changes that people might not think about?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the two you mentioned, you know, on the cost side, certainly with an autonomous fleet, we do believe the cost will be significantly lower to be able to access transportation. And then the other thing too is the configuration of the vehicle and all that. You know, it's still early days, but you imagine, you know, now you don't have a steering wheel or traditional driver's seat, passenger seat configuration. You know, people can be facing each other. The experience can be totally different. The caregiver can attend more to somebody next to them in the car. So, you know, still a lot of work that needs to be done. We have an amazing team here who's really just thinking about that. But I do think the impacts in healthcare can be tremendous.
And Lyft just is investing pretty heavily in the autonomous drivers as well, right? Did you just open a new like testing and training facility?
Yeah, so we opened up a new facility down the peninsula here in California, 100,000 square foot facility. And, you know, we've really been partnering with a lot of these organizations who are building fleets of vehicles who then can essentially put those vehicles onto our network. So we have a partnership with a company called Nutonomy, the East Coast. And then recently we've been doing work with Waymo and Google now being an investor in Lyft. So there's really interesting things we're doing to really, you know, drive the growth of autonomous.
Yeah. Well, Dan, thanks so much for sitting down with us. First of all, if there are listeners who haven't yet joined the rideshare revolution and started using it themselves, what do they need to know about downloading the app themselves? Yeah. What do they need to start using Lyft?
Sure. So you can always just search for Lyft, L-Y-F-T, in the Android or Apple App Store. One thing, too, if the listeners have never taken a Lyft before and they're downloading for the first time, giving it a try, if you enter the code in the promo section, you can enter a code. If they enter the code L-Y-F-T, Lyft Care, C-A-R-E, 1717, so Lyft Care 17, it'll give you $15 for your first ride. So great way to check out Lyft if you've never tried it before. And then also, if you want to learn more about our work within healthcare, if you just go to lyft.com/healthcare, you can learn about some of our partnerships and work in the space there.
Yeah, and if any of the listeners do have questions specifically about how their organization can partner with Lyft, we're happy to connect ourselves or go ahead and check out Lyft online.
Yeah.
And you can find more answers there. Thanks again, Dan. We really appreciate it.
Likewise. Yeah.
And just a shout out to Dan as well for being a great friend in the industry to us.
Right.
I think over the last year and a half, Dan, we appreciate the relationship with you and Lyft. And again, thanks for taking the show
and
today.
And a gracious host.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And it's been a pleasure working with you both, and look forward to the future.
Awesome.